Welcome to HSBC Talks Business, the podcast series that brings together business leaders and industry experts to explore the latest global insights, trends, and opportunities. Make sure you're subscribed to stay up to date with new episodes. Thanks for listening, and now on to today's show.
Hello, and welcome to today's HSBC Talks Business podcast, the first in a series looking at the ASEAN. I'm Michael Cooper, Head of Communications for Commercial Banking in Asia, and I'm delighted to be joined today by Christina Lee, Head of Partnerships, Collaboration and Platforms in Singapore, and by Dan Lim, Southeast Asia Lead for Venture Debt. We're going to be talking about the ASEAN new economies and their significance in driving growth and innovation. The Association of Southeast Asian Nations, known as ASEAN, is on course to become the world's largest single market by 2030, thanks largely to a shift in its economic focus. ASEAN economies are traditionally associated with agriculture, mining, consumer goods, heavy industries, and semiconductors. But the region's relationship with these industrial sectors is evolving. Today, ASEAN's new economies are much more focused on technology, with innovation, automation, and digitization driving a move towards advanced manufacturing, healthcare, e-commerce, and electric vehicles. In this podcast, we're going to be looking at what's driving this evolution, the role policymakers play in supporting this transformation, and how further collaboration between ASEAN member states will ensure the success of new economies in the future. So let's get started by exploring exactly what we mean by the new economy, what's driving their growing influence in the region. Christina, could I start with you?
Sure. And thanks for having us, Michael. So if we think about ASEAN, it sounds like it is one region, but at the same time, it's actually made up of such a diverse range of countries. In fact, by 2022, ASEAN has already got a nominal GDP of 3.6 trillion. And it's been positioned as the fifth largest economy in the world. And we have seen how, in the wake of COVID-19, with this dynamic region, it has attracted a lot of investment. So one of the advantages of ASEAN is actually from the diversity in terms of language, culture, economies, and also from the range and age of people that live in ASEAN. If we think about ASEAN as siblings, actually, the youngest amongst the siblings would in fact be the Philippines, and the oldest being Thailand at 41 years old and 26. This is actually a very highly tech-savvy group of people who are coming first from a mobile perspective before they even own a computer or a laptop. And in fact, the mobile penetration of this group of population is more than 100% in some of the markets, for example, in Indonesia. Dan, what about you? What do you see in ASEAN?
I think, as Chris mentioned, the opportunity for ASEAN is significant. And I think maybe we can start off by thinking about what we define as new economy. And the way we think about it is, any business that's disrupting an existing product or service in a conventional manner, or disrupting the way business is done, i.e. introducing a new business model in the region, often with technology. ASEAN GDP was around $4 trillion last year, and affluence is rising in the region. 5 years ago, 10% of the population can be categorized as mass fluent, and that's expected to double to 20% in the next 5 years.
Brilliant. Thanks. So much promise and potential going on there. Could you take us through what you see as some of the opportunities in particular sectors that what we refer to as the new economy? Christina, if I could come to you first.
Sure, Michael. So a lot of the sectors that we see arising, it can't be divorced from the roots of ASEAN and the nature of the demographics of people who live in ASEAN, which is why some of these disruptive new business models have come about to solve some of the challenges or some of these opportunities that are being seen in the markets. FinTech is an example. Why is FinTech actually doing so well and attracting so much investment in ASEAN? It really starts from the fact that about 6 in 10 Southeast Asians are actually underbanked at the moment or unbanked. And we have 70% of informal workers who make up the workforce who are financially underserved. But at the same time, it has created a lot of opportunities for fintech players to come in to see how they could serve this group of people. Financial inclusion has been a very huge theme for ASEAN that we have seen a lot of different varieties of fintech companies mushrooming across the region. And due to the nature of the region, the kind of problems that they aim to solve are also very unique and different. It could be, for example, extending credit loans specifically to farmers, to ensuring that the young population has access to student loans to help them to even gain access to education. The second sector that I will call out is agri-tech. this region has actually very strong agricultural roots. As example, you know, Thailand, there's 32% of employment that's being generated from agriculture, and in Indonesia, 28%. So 1 in 3 to 1 in 5, thereabouts, of the population is being employed purely to ensure that there's food grown and to feed the rest of us. They could be facing issues on how to ensure that they are feeding their, you know, crops in the right amount of water or right amount of feed when currently it's all very manual. These are some very interesting areas that are being solved through data, through AI, through robotics, right? Which AgriTech has brought in and is very new to this population. But at the same time, after they've embraced it, it has been generating a lot of social benefits to these farmers because it translates into cost savings for them and higher margins and higher profits for them as well. At the same time, AgriTech is not necessarily really limited to only countries which have strong agricultural roots. If we look at, you know, a very urban country like Singapore, where we have no land space and in fact, you know, face land scarcity, but because of COVID-19, which has brought out some food security challenges for a nation that is very dependent on imports for food and basic supply of things like vegetables, chicken eggs, right? It has brought about an increased interest in urban farm technology. And food tech and agri-tech in general has been thriving in Singapore as well. So over to you, Dan. What do you see then?
So a couple of other sectors that we see a lot of interest in would be health tech. For example, last year, 15% of investments went into health tech versus 6% in the prior year when we think about early stage businesses. So that demonstrates interest from the investor side going to this sector. And when we think of healthcare or health tech, startups are addressing pain points across various stages of delivery. Everything from preventive care, helping patients detect illnesses at earlier stages, through to care delivery, medicine, medical device improvements, and to post-care monitoring, for example, telemedicine. So across the spectrum of healthcare, we see innovative businesses improving the experience from patients and consumers. The other sector that we see a lot of interest in is also e-commerce. So for example, if you look at the ASEAN e-commerce industry, including travel, gross merchandise value last year exceeded $150 billion. This has been growing at about 15% a year and is still expected to grow at a similar rate in the next couple of years going forward as well. Interestingly enough, travel hasn't recovered to pre-COVID levels as of last year, which is expected to take place this year. So we see a lot of interesting businesses in this spaces as well.
Great. Thanks, Bo. It's fascinating to hear just the breadth of sectors that are transforming before our eyes in the wake of all this new technology. We've talked a little bit about demographics. We've talked a lot about digitalization, but actually I'd like to come back to one of the other Ds that I think, Dan, you mentioned earlier, which was disruption. Could you tell me a little bit more about exactly how this technology is disrupting these more traditional sectors in ASEAN?
I think for disruption to take place, there needs to be, I guess, a balance between the demand and supply. So if you look at the region, for example, on the demand side, you see rising affluence, social media, and all these factors actually are driving consumption patterns and demand levels of consumers in the region. Someone said it best, which is unmet needs are being met as these new businesses roll out, and some consumer wants actually are becoming needs going forward as well. So for example, in the former unmet needs being met, I think that's addressed through a lot of healthcare startups. You see patients not getting access to healthcare are now getting it as businesses kind of roll out in the region. On the wants becoming needs, I think a good example is travel. For example, in the past, travel used to be just a luxury for a big proportion of the population, whereas now with rising influence, local travel and international travel is increasingly becoming a need on an annual basis for consumers. Apart from the demand side, you know, driving new economy businesses, on the supply side, there are two enablers here. One is a good pool of talent that has come out of previous startups in the region, including some of the companies that have reached unicorn status. And there's also a lot of capital, or actually more than sufficient capital for the region to achieve this as well. So based on some reports we've seen, I think dry powder estimated for the region was about $16 billion. And so that will fund the next leg of growth of new economy businesses in the region. Specifically for the e-commerce sector, for example, if you look at Southeast Asia, penetration is estimated at the 20% mark versus close to 50% in China. So this is another metric that shows, you know, the opportunity set for certain verticals in Southeast Asia. And in addition to that, I think the one last lever here that's supporting growth is tech firms and startups actually aligned with the mobile-first consumer market, which is what Chris mentioned at the start of the pod. And so when these firms are developing apps, developing consumer interfaces with a mobile-first consumer in mind, they've been able to drive a lot of adoption and penetration in the market as well.
Right. Thanks, Dan. And Chris, from your perspective, with all that in mind, what do you think of the investment opportunities of firms operating across ASEAN? What does the landscape look like?
So firstly, from ASEAN, when it comes to attracting investment capital, Singapore does attract quite a disproportionately large amount of capital, with more than 60% flowing through Singapore. That doesn't necessarily mean that more than 60% of the money ends up with Singapore-based new economy companies, but that it actually is reflective of the fact that a lot of these either investors are based out of Singapore or that they're using Singapore as a springboard. I think secondly, because of the nature of, you know, the market valuation of a lot of these new economy companies, there has been some market adjustments that's been ongoing for the past 18 to 24 months. And we do see increasingly a lean in more towards earlier stage companies where the ticket sizes expected from investors are smaller. But that doesn't mean that, you know, there isn't interest in the later stage ones. It's just the nature of the current investment landscape where it ties in very much with the rest of the world and what we're seeing. Of course, there's also some very buzzy trends that we all know of. AI technology in general, anything with an AI component is also very high likelihood able to get the attention of investors.
What's obvious to us at HSBC is that the right banking partner can make such a huge difference to a business looking to expand from startup to scale up, operating in one market to multiple markets. What are the sorts of things that these businesses should consider on their growth journey? Can I start with you, Christine, and come to Dan?
That's a great question. We're very lucky to get to talk to a lot of these founders, and they have very interesting stories, and they're very passionate about why they started their company and the kind of problems they aim to solve and the impact that they're making on society, right? So that ties in and leans in very nicely with our commercial banking kind of DNA as a bank, and that's where we sit, right, between Dan and I. So we aim to actually support founders on their journey, firstly, even as soon as they have a company and they have incorporated a company with basic requirements that they might have, you know, from operating account to their FX needs, for example, you know, just to help them with their daily business needs. And we try to solidify that a bit further with an external collaboration that we've established last year with an investor, global investor called Antler. And they actually go very early in investing into founders. And they call it day zero investing. And we hope that through this collaboration, we are also demonstrating how early we aim to be supporting these new economy founders. We also hope to help them scale. So as and when they're ready to expand internationally, then this actually ties in with our international network and footprint as a bank. If they're headquartered out of ASEAN, they tend to then expand into ASEAN first. Or if they choose to go into an international market outside of ASEAN, that's where it also leans into strengths of HSBC.
Thanks, Christina. You, Dan, closing?
Thanks, Michael. So in addition to what Chris has mentioned, banking services, capital is also crucial for startups to achieve the scale that they need to. And at HSBC, we provide a comprehensive range of financing solutions across different teams. So we cover companies across various stages of growth and provide financing for various purposes, be it companies that are Series A through to pre-IPO and beyond, or for companies that either need term or revolving solutions, be it for working capital or for CapEx purposes. So overall, you know, a very comprehensive suite of financing products. And I think our clients will benefit from that. Thanks, Michael.
Christina, Dan, thank you both so much for your time. There is such a buzz about the new economy in ASEAN. So it's been really interesting to understand a bit more about what it is, what some of the complexities are surrounding some of these different sectors, but also just how we as a banking can really lean in and drive our clients' growth across all of the continent in ASEAN. So thank you for your time, and thank you, everybody.
Thank you for joining us at HSBC Talks Business. We hope you enjoyed the discussion. Please do subscribe to the HSBC Talks Business channel to stay up to date with new episodes.